Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Tom Weber, one of Wisconsin's most influential conservative voices. Radio host Charlie Sykes is retiring next month, and he has spent this year speaking out against Donald Trump. His thoughts on the future of conservatism at 11.
Support comes from Minnesota State Parks and Trails, offering the Minnesota State Parks gift card. Getting out there all year is a wish that could come true when the gift card is redeemed for rentals ranging from kayaks to snowshoes. Online at mndnr.gov.
Support comes from Minnesota Dance Theater, presenting Loyce Holton's Nutcracker Fantasy, with music performed by the 44-piece Nutcracker Orchestra December 16th through 23rd at the State Theater. Tickets through Ticketmaster.com. Information at mndance.org.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now in depth on what it would take to bring middle-aged men back to work. Because a lot of them are not working, and we're going to talk about why in a minute. But here's some context on that. The number of men participating in the U.S. workforce has been in decline since the mid-50s, and there are now 1 in 6 working-aged men who aren't working when they could be. What will that mean for our national economy, for individual household economies? I'm curious about whether the Trump administration's economic plans are going to give new opportunities to these men and how much it matters overall to the economy that they're not working. We're trying to reach Jared Bernstein. He's the former chief economist for Vice President Biden and a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Amy Lindgren's with me in the studio. She's the founder of Prototype Career Service and a columnist for the Pioneer Press. And hey, Amy, good to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So here's my question for our listeners. If you're a man and you're somewhere between your mid-20s and your mid-50s, are you struggling to find work that's commensurate with your skills at the wages that you want? Are you not working while you wait for the right job to come along? And for everyone, what is this like for your family? So if you're a man, you're somewhere in your mid-20s and your mid-50s, I want to know if you are having a hard time finding the kind of work that you think is commensurate to your skills and to the wages that you think that work is worth. And if you're not working, are you waiting for the right job to come along? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. Steph Curtis is at nprnews.org/live. I'm on Twitter at Carrie NPR. I think we might have Jared Bernstein on the line. Jared, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good. Hey, good to have you on the show. Join Amy Lindgren with me. She's in the studio. Just want to let you know what's going on here. So
great.
Thanks for joining us. So, Jared, I said in the introduction that the trend has been going on for decades of fewer white men in the workforce, and also men of color, I should say. Did the deep economic recession we came through accelerate that? Why or why not?
Well, just to be clear, it's not just men. There's been a decline in the employment rate. So let's be clear, we're talking about employment rates, not unemployment rates.
Okay.
The share of the population that has jobs. There's actually been a decline for women as well. And the man's problem has been going on for a lot longer. That's a longer-term trend that goes back 30 or 40 years. Women started seeing some of those same declines around 2000. And it very much seems to relate to the absence of enough gainful employment opportunities. Now, there's lots of other reasons why this is going on, but it does look pretty fundamentally like what economists call a labor demand problem, just not enough jobs for the job seekers that we're talking about.
Okay, so when you say that, though, Jared, does that mean there are not enough jobs that fit the skills that these seekers have? Or okay, because there's a difference,
so, I mean,
right?
We're talking, if you look at the non-college educated workers, the problem, again, both men and women and across race, the problem is more evident. So it does appear that in many cases what these workers are bringing to the job market is what employers are increasingly less looking for. So that is part of the problem.
Okay, so Amy, I know you mm-hmm. see a lot of career seekers in your office here at Prototype. So here's what I want to know. High school graduates who have never started college, are mm-hmm. four times more likely to drop out of the labor force than they were. Are you seeing people who have either never started college or somewhere on their mm-hmm. college education path, and they are really struggling to find work that fits that?
Yes, for a few reasons. I mean, from a counseling perspective, it's so varied according to each individual. But there's a huge self-confidence issue for mostly in that category that you just described.
Right.
I've not had women, but I have had young men in that category who are as my clients. I can't put my finger on any young women who were not finished with college. Or not entering in college, but, you know, we're struggling. But I've had young men who never went to college or took advanced training after high school and were struggling. And for the most part, what I've been seeing have had been issues related to confidence.
What is that? Tell me exactly what that means.
They don't know how to present themselves. I mean, that's something that I think we forget that when we've started to pull the ladder up behind us. I mean, we started to say to people, well, without this certificate or that training, you know, don't bother applying for my jobs. And that's what I think of as, you know, I got in the door and now here comes the ladder behind me because you're going to have to try harder to get in the door. So this generation of employers has been so focused on certificates and training, we forget that you come out of high school, you don't know what to do if you don't have a certificate. I mean, 18-year-olds know how to go to school. They may or may not be good at it. They may not want to go. They may not go. But they don't know how to look for a job if they don't have that other piece of certificate to wave around at the employer.
Go ahead, Jared.
So I've observed something really interesting in looking at the crunching the numbers on this and trying to get into the real nuances. And one of the things I observed is that when the economy gets really strong, the folks who respond the most are actually the least skilled. That is, when they get pulled into the job market because there are lots of employment opportunities, they actually find their way into jobs. Now, this is not contradicting anything you just heard, because there are obviously a lot of people with the problems that a job counselor would see.
Right.
But my point is that there's two ways of looking at this, and they're both relevant. One is from the perspective of the person themselves, their skills, their confidence level. That's key. That's critical. We need to work on that side. But the other side is the demand side, the job availability. And one of the things we see is that when job availability is really robust, even the least skilled workers respond.
Call here from Bill in St. Paul. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Just wanted to comment that I am the person you were talking about.
You are.
Middle-aged, haven't been able to get a job in my field, and now I have taken a retail job, which is about half the salary I used to make.
Bill, what is your field?
It's architectural and design sales. So
okay.
I sell furniture and carpet to the businesses.
Right. So are you finding that when you're out there applying for jobs that you don't have the resume, the education, the certifications, as we said, that people want? Or what's happening with that?
I think it's the education. I have some college. But I have a lot of experience, and no one anymore is taking into account experience. I've got 25, almost 25 years worth of experience in that field, and just can't nail the jobs anymore.
I'm really glad you called, because this is something I wanted to talk about, Amy. Experience mm-hmm. versus education. Why wouldn't an employer look at experience as something that, you know, that supersedes education?
Well, first, a couple of quick points. One is, I'm not sure that Bill would actually be counted in the statistic that we're talking about, because he is
working.
Yeah, but that's just a side point.
Right.
And second, the field that Bill just described is one that has been contracting. And so without something extra to demonstrate in terms of a great certificate or experience that is, amazing of some sort, he'd be in trouble in any case because that particular area is just not doing as much growing or hiring. But all of that aside, the question of experience is one that has as much as anything to do with the messaging from the candidate. We've been doing an awful lot of work, I have anyway, in the last 10 years of trying to help people message well. What you can do that they need done does not translate on an online application or in a traditional format of a resume.
So when you say message well, you mean how do I get in the door to talk about...
No, not how do you get in the door. Just how flat out, first of all, do I describe myself? How do I think about my skills and my strengths?
Got it.
From the perspective of their needs, and how do I present that on paper, if that's likely to be the first way that they're going to encounter the candidate, as well as through the messaging. I know that's a lame word, but through the way that you have others speak for you. I mean, so people talk a lot about networking, and you know that I'm kind of half and half on the whole
concept.
Yes,
I do. Yeah.
But when it's strategically done, where you say to yourself, these are the reasons someone should hire me, and those reasons have been strategized well, and then that's the message that you get your network to carry forward for you. Well, that's magic. That's when it works. But these are things that they're not at all out of the ability of my middle-aged workers. It's just that it's not the way they grew up looking for work. And it's sometimes like turning the Queen Mary to develop a different approach because, again, the systems that are currently primarily dominant in the hiring process mm-hmm. do not honor experience. They don't interpret experience.
Jared, can I also ask you about the mismatch of skills that would-be employees have and what companies are looking for? You know, we've done, I don't know how many shows on this, and it seems to be some economists say it isn't a mismatch, and mm-hmm. others economists say, no, there's real evidence for this. Where do you come down on that?
Well, to give you the most annoying economist answer you can give somebody, it's both.
Okay.
And I really say the economists who say that mismatch isn't an obvious problem are making the following point. They're looking at wage offers that employers make, and they're seeing those wage offers be pretty stagnant. Now, over the last couple of years, we've begun to see increases in wage offers, but the economist kind of goes by this first group of economists goes by this observation that if you're an employer and you can't find a worker with the skill that you need, you're going to raise your wage offer to get a better quality worker coming through your door.
Right.
And when employers fail to do that, which they have for decades, I mean, frankly, I've been in this business for decades. I've never heard an employer not say, I can't find the workers I need. So they say it all the time.
Right.
A lot of economists say, well, put your money where your mouth is, raise the wage offer. So when you don't see that, you get skeptical about the mismatch. Now, on the other hand, to be this annoying two-handed economist, it is the case that particularly geographical mismatches exist. That is, employers can't find the workers they need in their area, and part of that has to do with people being mobile enough to get to where the jobs are, and part of it has to do with just what economists call frictions in the job market. It just takes a while for people to find where employment is. So I do think there are mismatch problems, but I don't think they're as deep-seated as employers say they are, or they'd be raising their offers a bit.
Okay, good. Now, I feel like I have some clarity on that. We have a caller here from somebody who says they can't find the people they need, so this is good, to Mark in Cottage Grove. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, tell me about your industry and the search for good employees.
Well, I do tires for commercial vehicles, and basically what we're seeing right now is everybody coming in the door doesn't know how to work that hard anymore. Generally, they come in, they're there for a week, they see what the workforce is really like, and then they quit and they hold out for an office job or something much, much easier, even if it pays half as much.
So have you had to raise your wages, Mark, to get people in who are willing to do that work?
We've been raising them for a while now, and we still can't get people in.
Really? This is really interesting. So what are you doing to make up for that?
Well, our guys are working longer hours, and everybody in our shop is getting raises just to keep them here.
Well, Hey, hang out with us here, Mark, if you can, for just a second. I want to hear what Amy and Jared have to say. Amy, what are you hearing that?
Well, if I was Mark and I had that problem, I don't know that this would solve the problem or that he hasn't tried it, but I would do as much recruiting as I could from farms and from exhausted self-employed people.
Mark, have you tried that? That's an interesting idea.
Well, we've tried just about it in every age bracket, race. It doesn't matter. I mean, everybody that comes in, we have a super high turnaround rate.
Well, the reason I mentioned the farms and the exhausted self-employed people, those are two groups of people who work like crazy. I mean, it's not hard work that turns them away. It's the sense that, like, for self-employed people who are not quite making it in their whatever they're doing, they need a check. They you know, they've been working like crazy for no pay, and they need a check, and they need stability, and they're going to have some of that work ethic that you're looking for. And we have a diminished farm kid population, you know, decade after decade, but traditionally that's been a very good source for employers who are looking for strong, hard workers.
Jared, what do you think about Mark's scenario?
You know, it's one of these scenarios. This is where, you know, I'm an economist that looks at macro data sets. So it sounds like very much kind of geographically sort of specific problem that he's facing. I mean, where I work, we're also hiring people, and we're getting one great. We have an embarrassment of riches. We have so many great potential hires right now. We have the opposite problem. So I don't think, you know, I think Mark's talking about something that's generic to his situation. I'm not saying he's the only one who's going through that, but the only, it sounds like he's tried everything. It's often the case that there needs to be a certain amount of churn, meaning you have to kiss a lot of frogs before you get a prince. Not that I like to give retail advice, but it would seem that the more you keep churning, eventually you got to turn up with somebody. I mean, look, there are a lot of people who complain. We just had a caller who can't find gainful employment.
Right.
And in that kind of a labor market, you ought to be able to find, especially if you keep raising your wages like Mark's been doing, you ought to be able to find who you're looking for eventually.
Mark, how many people would you be able to hire if they turned up at the door of the company?
Two right now.
Really?
Just for our store.
Huh. I'm really glad you called. Thanks. And you happen to be listening to the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steph off the page.
Todd says, I'm a 58-year-old white male. I recently completed a second bachelor's degree, this time in mechanical engineering. When I apply for an entry-level position with two college degrees, solid work history, I can't even get an interview.
Wow.
All of the 20-something people I graduated with have jobs. You can't tell me that age discrimination isn't a problem.
Let's go back to Amy on this. Amy, what do you think?
This would be a situation where, you know, not assuming that Todd hasn't tried a lot of things. I'm sure he has. But I would definitely pull offline. I mean, that's not going to be the tool for him. And if he's got that kind of data, he's got cohort colleagues who've been hired with the same degree that he has, and he's not, and the only thing he sees different is their age, then that online system is going to pick that up, and he needs to be someplace else in his search where that's not an eliminating factor being used.
Two different perspectives this morning as we talk about what's going on with the labor market, particularly for what, men 25 to 54, white men, men of color. What's happening in the fact that their labor participation is declining? Now, I heard Jared Bernstein, and I take him at whatever he says on this about labor participation. But yeah, I don't want to dismiss that, Jared. But I also want to say that we are zeroing in because the trend seems to be more emphasized when it comes to men.
Well, the thing about men is that it's a much longer-term trend.
Got it.
I mean, women caught that trend just in the last 15 years. For men, it's been 40 years.
All right, got it. So Jared Bernstein with us this morning to give us the economist's view on this. He's a senior fellow at the Center on the Budget and Policy Priorities, was a chief economist to Vice President Joe Biden. And Amy Lindgren here from the I work with these people. I've seen these trends. I'm trying to help people get into the job market. She's the president and founder of Prototype Career Service, and you can read her column in the Pioneer Press. I want to say, if you're someone who is in this situation, you're somewhere between your mid-20s and mid-50s, are you struggling to find work that's commensurate with your skills and the wages that you want? And if you're not working while you wait for the right job, I mean, what is this like for your family, for your own household economy? Is there some advice, I guess, that you're seeking around that? 651-227-6000 800-242-2828. Step off the page at nprnews.org/live.
Jeff says, my wife is one of the people who haven't been able to find a job in the last 3 to 4 years. She sent out hundreds of applications, but she doesn't have an in-demand skill and doesn't want to go back to college. What we need is a rapid path to employment for a middle-class income job that's not just available, that's available outside of the trades. She doesn't want to be a plumber.
Eric says on Twitter, a 36-year-old white male with a bachelor's degree, single, no child, less than $14 an hour printer tech, and this is my best job. Employers no longer train. Jared, I wanted to ask you about that. Is that true, that employers just don't want to be in the – they expect the person to be – hit the ground running the day they show up at the job?
You know, I'm sure Kim would agree. I mean, there's just no generic kinds of – statements like that, they're going to hold for all employers. I mean, there are kind of what I think is sort of low-road employers and high-road employers. Low-road employers don't bother training. They don't really provide great quality jobs, probably not a lot of non-wage benefits. And the idea is that they've got a robust labor supply of hungry people who will come through the door. Now, some of those people may have the problems of an earlier caller said that they don't want to work as hard as they'd like, but they've got a pretty inexhaustible labor supply, so they just keep taking that low road. Other employers do train, and they pay their workers a decent and rising wage with benefits. You know, kind of Costco versus, if you think of some of the low-wage retailers, that's kind of a classic example in this case, where you've got firms that really do invest in their workers, but you've got firms that don't. I want to say one thing about some of our callers and off the pagers there.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know, we've heard a bit, and we've now heard a couple of comments from people with college degrees, in some cases with more than one college degree.
Right.
And they too have been having some issues. So I think it's we have to be careful not to suggest that, you know, if you go to college, your problems are over. They're not.
Amy, do you verify that?
Without question, because college is not related to the ability to perform a job, and employers hire you to perform a job. And so if they don't perceive that you can perform the job, the hiring won't happen. I want to make a quick loop back on something related to the question of employers training. I've been doing the career counseling for about 31 years, which is gives me enough perspective. I precede our dislocated worker program in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I feel like I've been observing is that the more state and federal assists that we have built in over the last 3 decades related to training so that the individual can go through a state-sponsored program, I feel like I've been seeing employers pull back on their own training programs. That might not be right, but that's what I've been feeling like I've been seeing. Employers see that somebody else is sort of picking up the reins on that, and they've adjusted their expectations that the worker will come to them trained, as opposed to that they used to think to themselves, I'm going to have to take this person on and train them. Are they trainable? I used to be placing people who are trainable, and that's turned into I'm placing people who are trained. And that shift, I think, correlates really strongly to the number of funded programs from the state and feds.
That's an interesting problem because kind of in classical economics, there's an assumption that employers are not going to expend their own resources to train a worker who might be gone next week. Mm-hmm. Now, as I said, there are some employers who did that, but as Amy points out, there may be fewer. And so if that's the case, if employers are basically assuming or experiencing that the training is taking place outside of their firm and therefore they're not going to allocate their precious resources to it, that does mean that we in the public sector have to think about the ability to ensure that we're providing employers with an amply skilled workforce. And by the way, we can't do that if we don't have sustainable budgets.
You know, I want to pull one more thing in there as well. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. If we're not putting the money towards it, the training's not happening from anybody then. But I don't think it's unrelated that the biggest rise I've seen in the for-profit schools, the schools that we're having so much conversation around now, and I for one, am on the other side of the bandwagon. I really value the role that for-profit schools have been playing in our economy. But I see that we wouldn't have them and they wouldn't have been able to find a market if we hadn't had a need. Individuals are identifying, I can't get a job without training. They're not eligible for other programs.
So if companies had been doing more of this, think for-profit...
I feel like if there had been a clearer path available or identifiable to those workers, they wouldn't have paid for their own training. If they're not going to pay for it, the schools don't have any way to make them... I mean, they wouldn't have been blossoming the way they were without the market.
A lot of people on the phone lines here. Let me go back to the phones to Derek in St. Paul. Hey, Derek, thanks so much for waiting.
Hi. Thank you for having me this
morning. Of course. What do you want to contribute to this?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm a millennial, and so, you know, I'd like to dispel some of the rumors about millennials, but mostly to say that, you know, I really do believe that because Minnesota has one of the highest percentages of educated labor force in the country, that we've really outcompeted ourselves. And I have an undergraduate in anthropology, actually, and I currently work at a broker dealer. To get this position, I worked 2 unpaid internships and a bartending job to get where I am.
Wow.
Well done.
Way to go, Derek.
And that's what it takes nowadays. Currently, I'm a master's student at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, and my interest is really in this exact conversation. I also serve on the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Fiscal Policy Committee, and what I'm hearing is that, you know, that competition for educated or that college degree type position has really skyrocketed, and that is so oversaturated. Whereas in certain sectors, trade skills, trade labor, like plumbing and things like that, are really hurting for jobs. And I think that my generation really was oversold this idea that the college degree was going to be the answer to all of our economic woes. And we're finding that that's true if you're willing to work harder than the next 99 people out of your cohort of 100.
Derek, this is such a good observation. I'm hoping Jared, because something weird happened with his phone there, could hear that. Jared, could you?
Yeah. I think it's interesting. You know, again, I'm thinking back to a caller who said, I can't find people who will work hard enough. Well, here's a guy who's clearly working his butt off to get where he is. So, again, I think a lot of this is just a very individualistic thing. It is definitely the case that people who are amply trained with a pretty serious agenda. So not just 6 weeks of learning how to get to work on time, but a 2-year apprenticeship on how to be a lab technician and fix the new MRI machine or something in that spirit, or to run a gerontology firm, things like that. These do not need 4-year college degrees, and they're important jobs and they're growing jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're parts of our occupational spectrum where we're going to need more workers. But again, they take work and training. And one thing, and I just alluded to this, that I think is really helpful in this space, we don't do enough of this in this country. They do a lot of this in Europe, are apprenticeship programs. Earn as you learn. This is a these are programs where maybe it's a pipe fitter, maybe it's a dye tool worker, maybe it's, as I said, someone in the healthcare field, someone who can fix the lab machine. The apprentice comes on the scene, gets paid at a reduced wage for a pretty long training period, which could last as long as a couple of years, and then has a guaranteed job and has been amply and adequately trained. Those are upper middle class jobs. We're not talking about poverty level jobs here.
All right. You know, Amy, I wanted to come back to you on the idea, what Derek said about being oversold, the value of the college education.
Yeah.
I know you have some, again, rather pushing back on conventional wisdom views about this, right?
Mm-hmm. It sounds like what Jared
has
got the same perspective from
exactly.
an economist's point of view. Yeah, I mean, the argument has never held water that if you go to college, you will get a great job, or that the job you get will pay well enough to justify the expense of college. I've always thought that college should be for its own purpose. I mean, if you want to learn something in particular, go to college to learn that particular thing, but to correlate it with a job afterwards, that's the purpose of tech and vocational school, not the purpose of college in my mind. So, I mean, just that they've never been connected to me, and yet they are culturally very much so.
Yeah.
And that was very much the case for Derek's generation. Well, without question, that I think we're almost past the madness that we've had as a culture.
Do you?
I hope so. Because we've got a lot of baby boomers who are not able to afford their own retirement because of their own madness in pushing their kids into the college programs. And I don't blame
them. Because
the
they
boomers.
Had to pay, you're saying, because yeah. they were spending money on.
Yeah. Lots of them took out the loans themselves.
Hey, the good people at Minnesota Compass, I love this. They often tweet statistics in these economic shows, and they've tweeted Minnesota ranks fifth among states for the percentage of adults aged 25 to 34 with a BA or higher. Oh, I didn't know that. Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey on top of Minnesota. Steph, off the page.
Jessica points out, she says, 45% of all our metro jobs here are in six low-wage occupations, food prep and sales, production, personal care and service, janitorial, health care support. The openings in these occupations have a combined median age of $11.75 per hour. And I also want to say that on nprnews.org/live, I put up a story by Kat Richard that we had on NPR News today about how Rochester needs workers and has a worker shortage right now.
Jared, you hear anxiety around this idea that we're moving more into a service-related economy and that the wages are just not going to be as high in that kind of an economy. Is that justified anxiety?
Well, it's a very diverse economy. Now, first of all, obviously, that change has been a very long time coming. That is not news to anyone. And in fact, in every advanced economy, it's the same thing. I mean, Germany is always viewed as a manufacturing powerhouse. And I guess compared to us, they are. But the share of manufacturing employment in Germany has gone down just as much as it has here. So, yes, we've been moving toward a service economy. And the thing about the service economy, say, versus the industrial economy, is that it is a much more unequal economy in terms of the pay scale. Mm. You've got many more low-wage jobs. But remember, if you're a money manager, a stockbroker, or one of these people that's pulling down, you know, million-dollar asset paychecks, you're also in the service economy. So in a sense, if you sort of took somebody out of the factory economy and plopped them into the service economy, the chance that they'd end up with a lower wage job is higher. There's just a much wider distribution of pay in the service economy.
Got it. Hey, Jared, I know you're traveling for business or pleasure, whatever it is, but I'm really grateful that you could be with us while you're out of town. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Jared Bernstein is a senior fellow at the Center on the Budget and Policy Priorities Organization. Hey, we had a call, Amy, from someone who wants to know if there are resources available for people who have been laid off in senior management capacity. Those retraining centers that we were talking about probably don't fit that, right?
Well, no, they do. In fact,
really?
if they were laid off, that's one of the principal eligibility criteria for what's known in the state as the dislocated worker program.
Okay.
Well, actually, it's nationally known that way. And a dislocated worker program, the funds are distributed through a variety, dozens and dozens of agencies in the Twin Cities have access to those funds to serve individuals who want to retrain. And so they can become a participant, a client of one of the agencies, and the agency will walk them through the steps to access the funding available to help them retrain. It's not piles of money. I mean, usually I don't hear money that goes much past $2,000 or $3,000 per individual,
okay.
And yet it's enough to get a solid start on a certificate, and it comes with counseling and things like that.
If you have come out of an executive level or senior management
right, and there's
kind
the
of
rub.
Position, yeah.
There's the rub. Not all of the agencies, in fact, I'd say relatively few, are well equipped to deal with the senior level of focus.
Okay.
And so very often what ends up happening is that person ends up purchasing their own services on the open market, becoming a client of one of the agencies, but receiving the higher level of counseling that they may need by paying for it.
Okay. Here's Christina on Twitter tweeting about the need for paralegals. I didn't know this. She says, we need paralegals. We have a great one now, but they're hard to find. If you're a responsible person who's proactive, can communicate, handle stress, likes variety in your job, come do this job. No, Fred, you can be a paralegal, Christina says. And the training I don't know what the training. Maybe Christina will tweet about what you, what kind of certificate of training that you need.
Well, and I would
that.
Love
do
if
you
she
know?
Would connect over to me because
okay,
I
good.
May have people in my client base. Who
What's
would
your
be
Twitter
interested.
Handle, Amy?
I do not have
what?
A Twitter
You're
handle.
You're not on Twitter?
What?
Oh my gosh. Okay, connect with Amy Lindgren via snail mail or something. I don't know.
email.
Email. Okay.
I have
do
a
you want
phone.
To put your email
you
address
do
out there? No, please.
Yeah. It's long but very simple. It's get a job. All one word.
Okay.
At prototypecareerservice.com.
All right. That's get a job at Prototype Career Service to connect with Amy. Christine, I hope you'll do that. Steph, off the page.
A couple of people mentioned that a stumbling block for them is drug testing and credit checks that employers sometimes require. And Hometown Girl says her son can't get first interview. All the job offers say they require experience. He can't get experience. No one is allowing him in the door. He's either underqualified or overqualified. He's been a bartender and doing freelance for the past 4 years. He is so frustrated.
I just want to note that you concurred when you heard about the background checks and maybe career criminal, not career criminals.
I think
criminals,
we're over
the
top on our
record.
Background checking. I really,
really?
Do. I do. I think just because we can dig up every last teeny weeny bit of information about somebody doesn't mean that's relevant to their ability to do the job or necessary for the employer to know. It just that we're able to do it, so we do it, and then we compare one person to the other, and we take the one with fewer nicks on their background. And I just don't. I'm frustrated like crazy about that whole thing.
Right. What do you do if you have something in your background? Do you come out with that?
There's a variety of options, but for sure you bring yourself offline. You don't compete with all sorts of people who have nothing wrong, so to speak, with them. I mean, you just go individually to the employer. You try to find yourself an advocate who will also speak for you, because having somebody between you and the employer who speaks highly of you is a huge asset.
Amy, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Lindgren with us from Prototype Career Service.